Well, wonderful good morning to all of you. Great opportunity to worship with one another, and I want to just say this for every week and each week and each Sunday. Appreciate so much the men who get up here and serve and in the worship service. They do such a great job. It's such a great service, and it's just I just appreciate so much all that you do. So appreciative of the teachers as we begin a new quarter. So thankful that we have men and women willing to take the time to teach themselves so that they can teach others. And teaching young people is not always the easiest thing, and we appreciate so much those efforts. We're so thankful for the parents who make use of these Bible classes as an aid, an expedient to help teach their children about Jesus Christ, the Savior, and the Word of God. This morning, we're going to get back into our study of the life of David, a man that was a man after God's own heart, a man that was not perfect, but a man that was dedicated. And we are looking at his life in a chronological series and learning some lessons that we can learn from David or those that were encountered by David. And so we're going to talk about this morning a lesson about how to deal with difficult people. You might remember last time we talked about that the overthrow of David's kingdom by Absalom. And that's where we're at. Absalom has gained the hearts of enough people in Israel, and he is now entering into Jerusalem, and David is having to, as we like to say, get out of Dodge. He's having to leave. But along the way, he meets certain people. And some of them are difficult people. And as Christians, sometimes we're going to be dealing with people that in our own estimation are difficult. They're hard to deal with. And it might be that they're hard to deal with simply because as Christians we have been called to live by a higher standard. Sometimes people meet difficult people and they are not Christians. They don't live by that same standard. And so they just do whatever they want to do. But God has called us to love other people and to love our enemy and to be at peace with all men. And so sometimes we have to deal with difficult people. And we're going to see David do that very thing this morning. And so, putting ourselves back in the story, this is the time of the rebellion of Absalom. And in 2 Samuel chapter 15 and in verse 14, this begins our story. And David said to all of his servants who were with him at Jerusalem, "Arise and let us flee, for otherwise none of us shall escape from Absalom. Go in haste, lest he overtake us quickly and bring down calamity on us and strike the city with the edge of the sword." And so David encourages his family and his group there to now take what they can and to flee. And David is thinking about two things. Number one, he is thinking about the safety of his family, of those that serve him, those that are around him. And number two, he is thinking about the city Jerusalem. He knows Absalom is after him, and that he will do anything to get to David. And that if David remains in the city, not only will he put his family in jeopardy, but perhaps the entire city of Jerusalem. And so David decides to flee. And so they leave Jerusalem through the Kidron Valley, up over Mount Olivet, and beyond. And so as David flees, It's interesting in the story, he meets certain of his countrymen, certain Israelites along the way. And some of them are for David. Some of them say to David, I will help you. I will go with you. And for some of them, David says, come, come with me, and you will be with us. Others, he says, you go back to Jerusalem. And they said, we will go back and we will help you. And so they become kind of like James Bond for David. They become spies for David and to help David thwart the plans of Absalom. Now you might think that such a great man and a great leader like David, the whole country would be in favor of David, but that was not the case. There were many that did not care for David, did not want David to be ruler over them. And so as David flees, he also meets some of his countrymen that are against him, that make things difficult for him. And so this morning, we're going to look at just one particular individual that was not for David, a man that was against him. And so we're going to look about this man and how difficult he made it for David. The man that we're going to talk about this morning is found in 2 Samuel chapter 16. If you want to begin turning with me there, we're going to read our story in the first four verses. And it's a man by the name of Ziba, or Ziba, however you want to pronounce that. But Ziba is a man that some of us might know. I have a picture of him that I'm going to show you in just a second. And some of you, when you look at this picture, you might recognize Ziba. Some of us kind of grew up watching a television show that Ziba was a cast member in. He wasn't the lead character, but he was one of the supporting roles. And you're thinking, what are you talking about? Didn't have TV when Ziba was alive. Well, here is Ziba. Here's a picture. How many of you recognize him? The younger generation may not know Eddie Haskell. But Ziba was just like Eddie Haskell. Eddie Haskell was a character in one of the great shows ever made, Leave It to Beaver. Taught some of the great moral lessons in life and entertained young people like myself for years. And young people could learn a lot from Leave It to Beaver that you could still see on TV today. But Eddie, you might remember, was an opportunist. He liked to take advantage wherever he could. And oftentimes to do that, he would flatter people. He would say whatever he had to get on their good side, or to get them to make a decision that would be to his favor. He was always over his best friend Wally's house, the Cleaver's house, talking about how beautiful Miss Cleaver was. And I always thought that Mr. and Mrs. Cleaver knew exactly who Eddie Haskell was. Well, that's what Ziba was. He is an opportunist. He is a flatterer. He's one that will take advantage of others to get what he wants or to improve his situation. And that's exactly what we're going to see in this morning's lesson. And those opportunists, those politicians who will say anything and do it, they are some of the most difficult people that we have to deal with. So let's take a look at 2 Samuel chapter 16. As David is fleeing and Ziba comes to him. And in verse 1 it says, now when David had passed a little beyond the summit, Behold, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him with a couple of saddled donkeys. And on them were 200 loaves of bread, 100 clusters of raisins, 100 summer fruits, and a jug of wine. And King David said to Ziba, "Why do you have these?" And Ziba said, "The donkeys are for the king's household to ride, and the bread and the summer fruit are for the young men to eat, and the wine for whoever is faint in the wilderness to drink." And the king said, "And where is your master's son?" And Ziba said to the king, "Behold, he is staying in Jerusalem, for he said, 'Today the house of Israel will restore the kingdom of my father to me.'" And so King David said to Ziba, "Behold, all that belongs to Mephibosheth is yours." And Ziba said, "I prostrate myself. Let me find favor in your sight, O my lord the king." Now, if you can look at those words, those final words in verse 4, where Ziba says, "I prostrate myself, let me find favor." If you could just picture Eddie Haskell saying those words, you kind of get the point. Now, as we talk about Ziba, you might say, "Well, I don't understand, because at first he looks to be a friend to David. He's brought these donkeys out with all of this food and a jug of wine, so that what? David's family can ride on these donkeys that might help the trip." Remember, what are they doing? They're fleeing. It might make it easier on certain members of his household. It might even speed up the traveling plans. He's got food along the way for them to sustain them as they flee from their dear home in Jerusalem. But what might first look to be a friendly act by Ziba is actually an opportunity that he has taken. Now, how do we get this? Well, let me give a little background in case we haven't remembered this. Ziba is a servant of Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth, you might remember, is the son of David's best friend, the deceased Jonathan. And you might remember when King Saul and his son Jonathan were killed in battle. David, in his mourning, said, "Is there anyone left of the family of Saul?" And one said, I think it was Ziba, actually said, "Yes, the son of Jonathan, your best friend, is still alive, Mephibosheth." And David called for Mephibosheth, and Mephibosheth thought he was a dead man, because that's what kings do when they take over the throne. They kill whoever has survived from the throne. But because of his love for Jonathan, David blesses Mephibosheth. He gives them all of Saul's remaining land. And he takes him and he says, "You will eat at my table." In other words, David takes Mephibosheth and treats him like a son now that he's lost his father. And Mephibosheth was so humbled by that. In essence, he thought he was dead, but David gave him life. And back in chapter 9, David says to Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, he says, "You go out and you work the fields of Saul for Mephibosheth, and you bring the harvest in for him." Because Mephibosheth was not only the son of Jonathan, he was also, you might remember, lame. He could not walk. He was handicapped. And so David had done so many great things for Mephibosheth, and here he asked Ziba, "Well, where is your master? Well, where is he?" And Ziba says he stayed back in Jerusalem because he thinks that this whole uproar with Absalom is going to bring the kingdom back to the side of the family of Saul, that he will be king. And you'll notice in verse 4, David is so upset with that betrayal of him, he gives all that was given to Mephibosheth to Ziba, to Eddie Haskell. And Eddie says, "Oh, I am so humbled. I bow my knee to you. You are the great one, Mrs. Cleaver." This really comes out when you look at when the whole uproar of Absalom is over. And over in chapter 19 and verse 24, David is on his way back into Jerusalem. And as he met certain people on the way out, he meets certain people on the way in. And one of them is finally Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan. He comes to meet David. And look at verse 24. "Then Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king. And look at his appearance. And he had neither cared for his feet, nor trimmed his mustache, nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed until the day that he came home in peace." What is the picture that he's trying to show us of Mephibosheth? Well, it's just like when you send your kid off to camp for a week and then they come home unwashed. Right? You send your kid home, to camp with 6 clean pairs of underwear, and they come back with 5 clean pairs of underwear. In other words, Mephibosheth has been in mourning. He hasn't been waiting for the kingdom to come back to him. He has been upset. He has been probably fasting. He has not taken care of himself. This is not something that he could just do in the spur of the moment. But since the day that King David left, he has done nothing to himself but been in mourning. Verse 25, and it was when he came from Jerusalem to meet the king said to him, "Why did you not go with me, Mephibosheth?" He wants him to find out why he betrayed him. Verse 26, so he answered, look at this, "Oh my Lord, the king, my servant, deceived me. My servant deceived me. For your servant said, 'I will saddle a donkey for myself that I may ride on it and go with the king, because your servant is lame.'" You see what Mephibosheth is saying? Ziba said to me, "I'm going to get this donkey. I'm going to get this food. You can ride on the donkey and we're going to flee with David." And he did everything of that, but he took the donkey for himself. He left Mephibosheth back home, lame and unable to move. And then verse 27, Mephibosheth explains about Ziba, "Moreover, he slandered your servant to my lord the king. But my lord the king is like an angel of God, and therefore do what is good in your sight. For all my father's household was nothing but dead men before my lord the king. And yet you set your servant among those who ate at your own table. What right do I have that I should complain any more to the king?" And so what does Mephibosheth do? He just tells David the truth. But he does it very humbly. He, in essence, says, "My troubles are not big enough to bother you with. But here's what happened. Here's why I didn't come with you." And so verse 29, the king said to him, "Why do you still speak of your affairs? I have decided that you and Ziba shall divide the land." And there's a lot of discussion as to why David did that. Why didn't he just give the land back to Mephibosheth? Because Mephibosheth didn't do anything wrong. He didn't betray David. He was set up by Eddie Haskell, by Ziba. And some believe that David gave Ziba not all of it, but half of it, because he looked in the future and thought, well, knowing Ziba and Mephibosheth, Ziba is going to continue to try to take this kingdom away from him. And so to end what could be years and years and years of battle, he gives Ziba half of it and Mephibosheth half. Others believe that David wasn't quite sure who's telling the truth. And so he just gives half. Kind of like Solomon wanted to take the baby. He didn't know who was telling the truth. He was going to cut the baby in half and get half to this woman and half to this woman. And others believe that maybe David just thought, well, Ziba has served Mephibosheth and he's done all of this work. And in fact, the food and the donkeys and all that, he has been a great aid to me. And that he did reward him because of that with half of the possessions. If I had to come up with an answer, I would probably say the first one makes the most sense. But truthfully, we don't know why he divided the land. But look at verse 30. Look at Mephibosheth when he's learned that through this deception, through this Eddie Haskell, he's lost half of his possessions. What is his attitude? What is he upset? Is he angry? Verse 30, Mephibosheth said to the king, "Let him even take all of it. Since my lord the king has come safely to his own house." Mephibosheth says, "I don't care about that. Let him take all of it. I am just glad that you are back home." And I believe that Mephibosheth is just being himself. He is always pictured as being this humble, grateful servant of David. We should not look at Mephibosheth's words as coming from an Eddie Haskell. He was being honest. But he lost half of his possessions to Ziba, who what? Betrayed his master. Who what? Made an opportunity. He didn't just take an opportunity. He made an opportunity. And that's what these opportunists often do, don't they? They look for an opportunity, or sometimes they'll just make their own opportunity. They will take advantage of people. They will say anything to anyone. And I don't know why Ziba did that. Maybe that's just his character. Maybe he thought, "I've been working all these years for Saul and now for Mephibosheth, and I haven't got honored. I haven't got anything for it." Mephibosheth just sits there. He's lame. He's handicapped. He doesn't even lift a finger. I do all the hard work, and he gets all the reward. Maybe that was something to do with it. But Ziba tore down his master so that he would seem better in the eyes of David. There was another opportunist in the story of David earlier on at the death of Saul. You might remember there was a man that came and told David, "I have killed King Saul," when in reality he had not. But he saw the opportunity to get good with David by killing his enemy, at least telling him he did. That didn't work so well, did it? David said, "You mean to tell me you killed the Lord's anointed?" Something David refused to do because the Lord put Saul on the throne. He was going to let God take him off the throne. And so what this man thought would be a great opportunity became his death. David had him taken out and executed for murdering the Lord's anointed. Do you have an opportunist that you have to deal with? Maybe at work. Sometimes people at work are, you know, they kind of are that little political person. They know the right things to say and they kind of want to move up through the company. And maybe you're a person in that company at this particular time that can help them, and they're going to use you any way that they can, and they'll say whatever they want to say or whatever they need to say. And then once they get what they want, they're going to squash you. you have to deal with someone like that? I hope not. Maybe there's some organization you're part of, and there's a person there that just, it's always about them. It's always about what they want. And they're going to look for any opportunity to get what they want. They don't care about what you've done. They don't care how long you've been there. It's all about them. You have a family member like that? Maybe an uncle? Maybe an aunt? I hope not. But there's opportunists. If they're at work, if they're in the community, they're in the family as well. And they can be difficult. They can be challenging. And the reality is that what through their opportunism, through their efforts, they might get what they want. And it might be our job. Or it might be credit that belonged to us and they take it. Or it might be some type of possession that we had and they stole it from us. It might be physical. It may not be. It may be something like an accolade or credit for something. And the truth is, through their efforts, they got what they wanted. Zibah got half of Mephibosheth's land. He didn't get all of it, but he had more than what he started with. And so we might ask, what do you do? How do I be a Christian and live by such a high standard, and yet I have this opportunist, this Eddie Haskell, that's making life difficult? And I believe the story answers that question. That God would expect us to be just like Mephibosheth. Meaning, number one, if you have the opportunity, tell the truth. Let whoever it is that's involved, just tell them the truth. Because as Christians, you have developed a lifestyle. You have developed a reputation of being Christ-like, of being honest, of being a hard worker, of being a dedicated member to your family. That when you tell the truth, and I believe this is the way it came out to David as well, that he knew Mephibosheth was telling the truth. Not so sure about Eddie Haskell. Just tell the truth. Well, what if that doesn't work? What if my boss doesn't believe me? What if my best friend just turns on me? That might happen. But as you tell the truth, you've got to be like Mephibosheth. You've got to remain yet that humble person. If you're dealing with something at work, just as you have honored your boss, just honor him. Be humble. That family member. And finally, be like Mephibosheth. Just be yourself. It's like Paul wrote in the book of Romans chapter 12. As far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. That's all you can do. You can just do as far as it depends on you. And as a child of God, that's what we need to do. Just like Mephibosheth, tell the truth humbly. Be ourselves. Let Christ shine in us. And does that mean that there's a guarantee that we'll get what we lost? No. That's the thing. Mephibosheth didn't get what he lost. And then God will do the rest. I don't know, maybe it was God's will that Zibah get half of the possessions. I don't know. And maybe God's will is not to do something right now. Maybe it's to do something later. We just don't know. But as far as it depends on us, we've got to deal with an opportunist, one that takes advantage, like Mephibosheth. I want to leave you with a few passages as we close that I think are really good here. As we talk about dealing with difficult people. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 20. Peter deals with some Christians who are going through difficulty called persecution. They haven't done anything wrong other than to live for Christ, and they're being persecuted because they are Christians. And so he writes to them, "For what credit is there if, when you sin and are harshly treated, you endure it with patience? But if when you do what is right and suffer for it, you patiently endure it, this finds favor with God." Look if you would as well at 1 Peter 3:17, where he kind of repeats that idea. "For it is better if God should will it so that you suffer for doing what is right rather than for doing what is wrong." That opportunist may get his way right now for doing what is wrong. But there's a possibility, if you handle it like Mephibosheth, that he's going to suffer for doing what is wrong. And what's the point in that? When I start thinking about this passage about that there's people who do wrong and suffer for it, and there's people who do right and suffer for it, and only one of those finds favor of God, I think about Calvary, as we sang about and we thought about in the Lord's table. There were three crucified that day. The one in the middle was suffering for doing what was right. The two on either side of him were suffering just like him, but for what they had done wrong. In fact, in Luke's account, at some point, the one criminal says to the other criminal, "We are suffering for what we did. We are getting what we deserve, but he has done nothing wrong." That's what he says right before he says to Jesus, "Remember me." In 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 19, "Therefore let those also who suffer according to the will of God entrust their souls to a faithful Creator in doing what is right." An opportunist, and Eddie Haskell, is a difficult person to deal with. And you'll have to deal with them. I hope this lesson will help you. I hope you'll remember it when that time comes. And it might be that the opportunist is exposed, and what was taken from you is given back to you. But even if that doesn't happen, by treating the opportunist as we've talked about this morning, you will find favor with God. Even if it means suffering when you do everything right. This morning you have an opportunity. That doesn't make you an opportunist. You have an opportunity right now where we're going to stand up and we're going to sing a song for your encouragement. You have an opportunity that if you're not right with God, to get right with God. If you're not a child of God, to become a child of God. And we can help you, especially with that final step, to be baptized into Christ. We've got everything you need. We have garments to change into. We have changing rooms in your privacy. We've got a whole baptistry of water here. And we've got Christians here willing to pray for you and to help you spiritually. And so if you need to get your life right with God, because no one knows what's going to happen this afternoon or tomorrow or this week, we have no guarantee that an airplane won't come flying through our house. We've got to be ready. And so don't be an opportunist. But if you need to take this opportunity, won't you do so as together we stand and as we sing?
How about affection?